I once again welcome all of you to Bhakti Sangha Chapra conference call. We are very fortunate to have His Grace Anitya Krishnadas Prabhuji today to speak on the topic of Srimad Bhagavatam 4.22.30 onwards. Hare Krishna Prabhuji, are you there on the call?
Hare Krishna Mataji.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, Dhanvat Pranam, all goes to Srila Prabhupada and Guru Maharaj. Thank you so much for joining and giving your valuable association and time this morning. You can take over the call, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna, thank you.
Dhanvat Pranam, all goes to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to the assembled Vaishnavas.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, I could not see still live link. Are you live, Prabhu?
Yes, it's just started now. You can see it.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you. I'll check in, Prabhu.
Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskrita Naram Cheva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirye Nasta Prayeshu Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Tama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Hare Krishna, everyone. So thank you for this opportunity to discuss this most glorious Srimad Bhagavatam, the ripened fruit of all Vedic knowledge. Beg the blessings of all assembled Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis so that we can have a very nice discussion today on this beautiful verse from the fourth canto, chapter 22, text number 30. The title of the chapter is Prithu Maharaj's Meeting with the Kumaras. So again, text number 30. Inde Vishaya Krishte Akshitam Dhyayatam Manaha Chaitanam Harete Buddhe Stambastoyami Varidat. Indraye, by the senses, Vishaya, the sense objects, Akrishtaye, being attracted, Akshitam, agitated, Dhyayatam, always thinking of, Manaha, mind, Chaitanam, consciousness, Harete, becomes lost, Buddhe, of intelligence, Stamba, big straws, Toyam, water, Eva, like, Ridat, from the lake. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. When one's mind and senses are agitated to sense objects for enjoyment, When one's mind and senses are attracted to sense objects for enjoyment, the mind becomes agitated. As a result of continually thinking of sense objects, one's real consciousness almost becomes lost, like the water in a lake that is gradually sucked up by the big grass straws on its bank. Purport. In this verse, it is very nicely explained how our original Krishna consciousness becomes polluted, and we gradually become almost completely forgetful of our relationship with the Supreme Lord. In the previous verse, it is recommended that we should always keep in touch with the devotional service of the Lord, so that the blazing fire of devotional service can gradually burn into ashes material desires, and we can become liberated from the repetition of birth and death. This is also how we can indirectly keep our staunch faith in the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the mind is allowed to think of sense gratification continuously, it becomes the cause of our material bondage. If our mind is simply filled with sense gratification, even though we want Krishna consciousness, by continuous practice, we cannot forget the subject matter of sense gratification. If one takes up the sannyasa order of life but is not able to control the mind, he will think of objects of sense gratification, namely family, society, expensive home, etc. Even though he goes to the Himalayas or to the forest, his mind will continue thinking of the objects of sense gratification. In this way, gradually one's intelligence will be affected. When intelligence is affected, one loses his original taste for Krishna consciousness. The example here given here is very appropriate. If a big lake is covered all around by long kusha grass, just like columns, the waters dry up. Similarly, when big columns of material desires increase, the clear water of consciousness is dried up. Therefore, these columns of kusha grass should be cut or thrown away from the very beginning. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is instructed that if from the very beginning we do not take care of unwanted grass in the paddy field, the fertilizing agents or water will be used by them and the paddy plants will dry up. The material desire for sense enjoyment is the cause of our fall down in this material world, and thus we suffer the threefold miseries of continuous birth, death, old age, and disease. However, if we turn our desires towards the transcendental loving service of the Lord, our desires become purified. We cannot kill desires. We have to purify them of different designations. If we constantly think of being a member of a particular nation, society, or family, and continuously think about them, we become very strongly entangled in the conditioned life of birth and death. But if our desires are applied to the service of the Lord, they become purified, and thus we become immediately freed from material contamination. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamstra Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parirana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamstra Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Paramami Hari Priye Vansha Kalpat Dubhyastra Kripa Sindhu Bhivacha Atitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunivari Paschata Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, everyone. So, again, I'll just read the verse again, 4:22:30. When one's mind and senses are attracted to the sense objects for enjoyment, the mind becomes agitated. As a result of continually thinking of sense objects, one's real consciousness almost becomes lost, like the water in a lake that is gradually sucked up by the big grass straws on its bank. So, we just a little bit of context for where we are in this chapter. So, King Prithu, Prithu Maharaj, has very wonderfully received the four Kumaras. And in the 13th verse of this chapter, he put forth a very important question. How one engaged in the dangerous material existence, whose only aim is sense gratification, can find any good fortune. So he is asking this question, when we're engaged in material existence, how we can find anything good from it. And then Sanat Kumar responds, noting first that Prithu Maharaj is a pure devotee of the Lord and is not asking this question for himself, but for the benefit of all living entities. He is a pure devotee, and so this is not his concern. But as we know, the devotee is always concerned for the troubles of others, do not care about their own troubles. It's para dukkha dukkhi. a very concern for the welfare of others. So Prita Maharaj is showing his great welfare and is asking this question of the four Kumaras, of which Sanat Kumara is responding. And in the 20th verse, the instructions begin, and they're all very nicely tied together, and it is connected very tightly with the verse we're going to discuss today. So I just wanted to read it. And this is verse 20. Sanat Kumara continued, "My dear king, you already have an inclination to glorify this lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such attachment is very difficult to achieve. But when one has attained such unflinching faith in the Lord, it automatically cleanses lusty desires from the core of the heart." So we see here that attachment to Krishna is the key to success. And the attachment is difficult to achieve. But by the process of bhakti and this faith, one can do it. And the key to this attachment is cleansing the lusty desires from the heart. And that remains an obstacle in our Krishna consciousness, as verse 30 that we read today, and that we'll discuss, very clearly indicates. And Sanat Kumara continues to discuss and build now how this attachment builds. So he says in the 22nd verse that this attachment, it increases by devotional service. And then in the very next verse, he highlights the importance of association. How to make progress in devotional service, it is predicated on having very, very good association. And in association, one increases their devotional service by hearing. And so as one, you know, progresses through the hearing process, then in 26, the result here is laid out, that one becomes fixed on Krishna by the grace of Guru, and then all of the material consciousness is burned away. And Srila Prabhupada references this point in the purport of verse 30, that one must burn away all material consciousness, and then one can realize the eternal position and become one in purpose with Krishna. So Sanat Kumara has explained, you know, sort of the end result of this attachment to Krishna in the execution of the devotional service is being free from all material desires. And now in the last few verses, he is cycling back to present what the challenges are of these material desires, or what problems they pose. And so now in this verse, we're going to see the dangers of an uncontrolled mind. A mind attracted to material sense objects, one loses their real consciousness and thus suffers greatly. They suffer through the cycle of birth and death, old age and disease, and all of the reactions from their sinful activities. Right? So losing our consciousness is key, our real consciousness. And, you know, one example that we can try to create a parallel from this materially contaminated mind and how we lose our consciousness, because sometimes we don't realize it. But I'll maybe try to create a more vivid parallel. You know, when someone is very, very intoxicated, very drunk, they lose their real consciousness. They begin to behave in ways that is not themselves. And, you know, they get into the car and they start driving. And they start driving very, very erratically, very fast and swerving. But this is not their natural way of driving. You know, suppose they had come to a party. On the way to the party, they would have driven in a very, you know, sane way, very safe way. But that same person, intoxicated by some intoxicants, whether drugs or alcohol, then begins to drive very, very erratically. So their behaviors have changed dramatically. And it is due to one's loss of consciousness. Right? They've lost their reality. So that's, you know, very clear to us. But a materially contaminated mind leads one to act in the exact same way. Full of material desires, one works like a donkey trying to satisfy the senses, which is the complete opposite of what one does in pure consciousness. In pure consciousness, one simply enjoys with Krishna. But in the materially contaminated consciousness, one is working so hard trying to satisfy all of these lust desires. But just like the drunk person doesn't realize that they're driving erratically, the materially contaminated person doesn't see this loss of consciousness. Right? One cheats and steals and lies driven by such intense desires. But this is not the natural consciousness. The natural consciousness is to be the loving servant of the Lord, very equipoised and peaceful in mind, never being, you know, tempted by anything else, very patient and tolerant, all these wonderful devotional qualities. But those qualities become subdued. They are lost when one becomes materially contaminated, just like the one's quality to drive very safely is lost when one becomes drunk. So in that similar, you know, way, when we become drunk over our material desires, we lose our real consciousness. And that's what's being presented here in this verse, and certainly the very dangerous outcomes that ensue, just as it is a dangerous outcome for one driving under the influence of intoxications. So with that, you know, reference point, I thought we could discuss today, with everyone's permission, three things. We'll discuss first the mind's attraction to the sense objects and how it creates great danger for us. And then two, how to purify the mind. How to purify the mind, Srila Prabhupada says at the end of the purport, by the additive process of bhakti. Emptying the mind of material desires is hopeless unless we add the sweetness of bhakti. So we'll talk about how to purify the mind of the material desires. And then finally, what is the power of a controlled mind? One that is free of all material desires. What is the power of that? Because if we understand that, it may inspire us to take to the actions required to purify the mind. Inspire us to take some endeavor. So we'll read a little bit from chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita. So just a little bit of overview, to set the stage of how things work in relation to the mind and desires. So the body we have today, it is based on the various attractions or desires we have had in the past. Each body is fashioned in such a way that it satisfies our desires. You know, the tongue of a hog is attracted to eating garbage and stool. The tongue of a human is attracted to eating dosas. The tongue of a bee is attracted to honey, while the tongue of a mosquito is attracted to blood. So there's attractions for each body that is satisfying a specific desire that we have had. So based on the various desires we have, a particular body is provided in nature. Thus we see 8.4 million species of life. Why so much variety? Because there are so many varieties of the material desires in the mind. And so to fulfill those, there are various bodies provided by nature. And that is why we see the varieties of life. And we see in Bhagavad Gita how the transmigration of the bodies we take is based on our sense desires. Based on our desires, we acquire our next body. Right? In the 8th chapter, Krishna says, yam yam vipismanam bhavam tejantate kalevaram, that whatever you desire at the end of this life, you will achieve. Simple. Right? And then in the 15th chapter, Krishna explains how the desires in the mind, along with the intelligence and false ego, it carries the soul to the next body. And this is how transmigration occurs from body to body. Again, the basis of that transmigration is the desires in the mind that are there. And so, just as it said in the 8th chapter, if one desires to achieve Krishna, one achieves that abode of this, there's no doubt. Right? Antakale chamam eva smanam muktva kale varam. Ya prayati samadbhavam yati nasrati samshaya. That one achieves the eternal abode of the Lord if one thinks of him at the time of death. So again, these desires become critical. And Krishna uses the beautiful analogy of how the soul is carried, using how the air carries the aroma. You know, the air, it remains pure, but when it passes over a garden, it carries the scent of a very, you know, beautiful flowers. But if that same air passes over a garbage dump, it'll carry the stench of garbage. But the air remains untouched. It's simply, you know, being carried by this scent. So the soul, it remains pure. But based on the desires of the mind and the intelligence and the false ego, it is carried to different destinations, different bodies, and experiencing so many activities in this mood of losing its initial and pure consciousness, its real consciousness. The soul's real consciousness is not to enjoy the whims of the materially contaminated mind. The soul's pure consciousness is to engage in loving devotional service to the Supreme Lord, being its part and parcel. So that is the transmigration of the bodies, and it is based on the foundation of the desires within the mind. So let's discuss now, again, this first topic, how the desires come into the mind and the dangers that it creates. So where do desires come from? Where did all my desires come from? Well, Krishna explains that as the mind comes in contact with the various sense objects, desires manifest. And often, or we could say almost every time, the desires start very small, and then they build into very large and strong desires. So the inclinations are very small, and then they rage very uncontrollably in time. You know, just like a forest fire. You know, these giant forest fires in California that are being struggling with. They start with the tiniest of spark. Sometimes a match that was not put out, you know, a cigarette butt that was not put out, something very small. And in time, that fire rages so uncontrollably that it engulfs entire cities and villages, and then people are left hopeless. So like that, the material desires, they often start very small. And Krishna explains this sequence in the end of the second chapter when he is describing the stitta prajna, the one fixed in divine consciousness. He says one does not engage its senses in the sense objects. But he says when one does, when one thinks about the sense objects, some attachment is there. You know, like one thinks, oh, there is a girl, woman. You know, nice person, nothing much, starts very small. But slowly that thinking develops into attachment. Right? And now thinking more and more and more, and that it develops attachment. And attachment matures ultimately into lust, this intense hankering. Can't stop thinking about this person. You know? And that lust manifests into anger. And anger into delusion, delusion into bewilderment. Then the intelligence is lost, and the result, one falls down. So we see the very dangerous consequence. It starts very small, but it ends in one's complete loss of intelligence and fall down. So this is the nature of all material desires. And all material desires, they end in misery. You know, this is the insanity of our material desires, is that they all end in misery. Because when that material desire is fulfilled, one remains unsatisfied due to greed, that one wants more and more and more. And we see this, you know, in simple terms, you know, wealth. When one has $100, having $1,000,000 seems like, you know, nirvana, the perfection of life. But as soon as that $1,000,000 is there, one is not satisfied. There's greed, and one wants more and more. And we have had experiences of this all in our own lives, you know. We acquire one thing, and then as soon as we get it, we want the next one. You know, the next iPhone, the bigger car, the bigger house, you know, the more bedrooms, the lake, the second car, the third car. We want more and more and more. So even when the desires are fulfilled due to greed, we are left unsatisfied. And when the desires are unfulfilled, we become angry. So either way, we suffer from these material desires. And the desires, they lead us astray from our real consciousness and thus lead us to different sinful activities, which results in suffering. The consequences of our sinful life is suffering. So the material desires are very destructive. They give us no peace and happiness. And so Sanat Kumar is commenting here on the importance of understanding what the mind's desires do to one's consciousness. Okay? And thus Krishna says that this place is Dukhalayam. It is full of misery. From top to bottom, there is no happiness within this material world. But we say, no, it's somewhere, it's here. Just see, it'll happen to me. But the result, since time immemorial, is the same. Not just for us, but for every living entity. These material desires always end in frustration. Right? And when we become contaminated by the material desires, as explained here in the verse, we lose our real consciousness. It is like that fish out of water. You know, with material desires, we're trying to enjoy out of our natural element. But we don't see it. You know, we forget to see that our original Krishna consciousness is almost completely lost. And the desires consume our consciousness so profoundly that we completely or almost completely forget Krishna. And just like if, you know, we're going to take a vacation to Hawaii in 3 weeks, we're very fond and very attached to this vacation, thinking all the, you know, enjoyment we can do. Our whole consciousness during those next 3 weeks is fully consumed by this trip. We can't get it out of our mind. It virtually dries up thoughts of anything else. So like that, we see all of our material desires, it dries up our real consciousness. And this analogy given is very, you know, nice, that the water in the lake is dried up by the kusha grass, the big straws. You know, those representing all of our material desires. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in describing the Bhakti Lata Beej, has said that, you know, we must nurture this creeper of bhakti by the watering process of hearing and chanting. But if we are watering the garden and we don't remove the unwanted plants, this unwanted grass, it will consume the nutrients. And Srila Prabhupada, you know, refers to that in the purport, how the unwanted things in the heart can then overcome and overpower the Krishna consciousness in the heart. And Srila Prabhupada here speaks of the sannyasi who is trying to practice Krishna consciousness while the mind is still filled with so many material desires. One is left in a very unsettled and agitated position. So this is the, you know, the very dangerous result of material desires. It leads to suffering, it leads to sinful life, and it leads to the loss of our real consciousness, which is the only means to achieve peace and happiness. So clearly the position of the mind is very important in our spiritual life. And so what to do? How to remedy this situation? The mind, the being coming in contact with so many sense and objects for millions of lifetimes, what to do? How to purify the mind? So Krishna speaks in the Bhagavad Gita about the uncontrolled mind and how the uncontrolled mind leads to great agitation. It is one's greatest enemy. But he explains that also the controlled mind leads to great happiness. Right? So what is the controlling of the mind? Well, it leads to happiness, but what does control mean? And Krishna explains, and Srila Prabhupada comments in this purport, that control does not mean that we shut off the mind, that we try to empty the mind of all of its desires. That is not possible. But control means that we pull the mind from material desires and bring them to desires for Krishna, enjoying with Krishna, attachment to the Supreme Lord. One must have desires. The nature of the soul is to be active. And so with activity means there will be desires. So when we say to become desireless, it doesn't mean that we lose all desires. It means we want to become free of material desires and become full of spiritual desires. And thus in Rupa Goswami's verse on pure devotional service, he's Anya Bilashita Shunyam. He says free of material desires. He doesn't say free of desires. Free of material desires. So this is the important point. Prabhupada says at the end of the purport that one must apply these desires to the service of the Lord. then they can become purified, and one can become free from material contamination. So how this happens, you know, Krishna explains in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that one, by pursuing the higher taste, this param drishtva nivartate, that the higher taste of Krishna consciousness replaces the lesser desires. So how to conquer the mind? It is not by trying to, you know, artificially remove these desires from the mind. That is very difficult to do. Instead, by adding desires of Krishna, one can automatically supplant and overpower these material minds, material desires. So we hear more, we chant more, we associate more. Drawn by the higher taste of Krishna consciousness, naturally, these material desires will subside from the heart, will naturally be removed. One does not need to artificially try to remove these desires from the mind. Actually, that process can become very frustrating. You know, sometimes in our Krishna consciousness, our chanting, our we say, where are these desires coming from? How to stop them? You know, we become frustrated by them, which is good to be frustrated by them. But the means to stop them is not to try to artificially remove them, but by to become more fixed in our devotional service. By adding bhakti to our life, we will slowly remove all of these material desires. That is the means of purification. And His Grace Bhojan Prabhu gives a very nice example in this regard. He says the mind is like a cup. And if you go to the beautiful sea and you see this blue water, you know, very attractive, and you fill your cup with this water, that water is salty. It is not very good for you. It is dangerous. But you're attracted to this water, and you don't want to dump it out. Again, that mind is like the cup. So he says, how to rid yourself of this salty water from your cup? If you put in that cup a better substance, a sweeter substance, of honey, and you start to pour honey into this cup, as you pour honey into the cup, it will sink to the bottom. And naturally, to make room for the honey, the water must overflow the top. And as you continue to squeeze and pour more honey into the cup, automatically the water is pushed out of the cup. And as you push more and more honey, ultimately the cup becomes completely free of this water. We use this example to illustrate that by bringing thoughts of Krishna into our mind, we will naturally push out the lesser desires of material sense attachment, sense enjoyment. So this process of purifying the mind, it is an additive process. It is an additive process of bringing thoughts of Krishna in, and naturally, these lesser thoughts will dissipate in the mind. And so this is the means. And while those thoughts come, one is encouraged just to not, you know, pay heed to them. Don't listen to them. Let the desire come, but don't act on it. The action of it is what is critical. And continue to engage in our devotional service, and soon one becomes fixed in thoughts of Krishna. So this is very important. And the association of devotees is very important. Right? The association of what we allow our senses to associate is critical in developing the desires. If I allow the eyes to see the forms of the Lord and the ears to hear the pastimes of the Lord, then those desires will enter the mind. But if I allow the eyes and ears and tongue to hear and see and touch and taste all kinds of material things, then those desires will enter the mind. So we have to close off the access to those bad desires. Yeah. By letting our senses come in contact with various things, all we are doing is planting more desires in the mind. Yeah. We often ask this question, you know, what's the harm? What's the harm of, you know, watching, you know, one movie? What's the harm of one TV program, one Facebook post? What's the harm? Well, the harm is that we are now bringing desires into the mind that we're going to have to work so hard to try to remove in the future. And those desires are ultimately going to lead to frustration. So if we close the senses to our material sense objects and open the senses to our spiritual activities, then we can make progress in cleansing the mind. Otherwise, it's like heating the car in the middle, you know, in the middle of winter, but then you have all the windows open. You know, you're bringing heat into the car, but your windows are open, and so it's all dissipating and leaving. Yeah. So we are practicing Krishna consciousness. We are trying to add spiritual desires into the mind, but at the same time, we are letting the senses roam freely and adding all kinds of other desires into the mind. And so we are not making progress. Bhakti Siddhanta says, Thakur used to, you know, say, it is like rowing the boat, but making no progress because you have kept the boat tied to the shore. You may be practicing Krishna consciousness, like rowing the boat, but we're going nowhere unless we detach from the material sense objects. So this is the, you know, the instruction we get in trying to understand how to purify the mind. It is by an additive process, not by a subtractive process. But we should be very mindful to not let the senses roam freely, because by doing so, we are just diluting the great effort we are putting forth in our practice of spiritual life. So when we ask that question, what's the harm? We can answer it for ourselves. The harm is by placing these desires in the mind that ultimately lead to great suffering and the loss of our pure consciousness. So finally, I just wanted to spend a couple minutes reading the benefits of a controlled mind. So how we can, you know, gain some inspiration. These three verses in Bhagavad Gita are, you know, very, very sweet and very powerful. And they come in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And in the sixth chapter, Krishna says that, you know, for one who has conquered the mind is the best of friends. But for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest of enemies. So the mind is either the friend or the enemy based on how it's used. You know, sometimes we think, oh, this terrible mind. Well, the mind is actually a very powerful agent if it is used appropriately. So the controlled mind, again, is meaning that we have come to fix the mind on Krishna. It is filled with thoughts of Krishna. Then it is the greatest friend. But when the uncontrolled mind is fixed on the material sense objects, it is the greatest of enemy, because it takes one to the darkest of places. And one encounters so much anxiety and fear and unsatisfaction. So the controlled mind is the key to peace and happiness. And so Krishna speaks these three verses. This is verses 7, 8, and 9 from chapter 6. So I just wanted to read them, and we can contemplate how sweet the controlled mind is. And hopefully this can serve as an inspiration for us to maybe take on some of the austerity that is required to control the mind, seeing what great result manifests from the controlled mind. So in verse 7, Krishna says, "For one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. To such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor are all the same." And that last sentence is very powerful. To such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor are all the same. Imagine how sweet it would be where our mind and heart would be sweetly positioned in the midst of honor and dishonor. To be able to tolerate heat and cold, happiness and distress, and to be unmoved from our bliss in spiritual life, that is the power of a controlled mind. We can encounter then anything and be happy. That is the power. Krishna continues in the 8th verse. "A person is said to be established in self-realization and is called a yogi when he is fully satisfied by virtue of acquired knowledge and realization. Such a person is situated in transcendence and is self-controlled. He sees everything, whether it be pebbles, stones, or gold, as the same." Striking here that when one is fully satisfied by the virtue of acquired knowledge and realization, it means full satisfaction is not dependent on the weather, dependent on the stock market, depend on what some devotee thinks of me, or what happens in some service I am doing. No. Happiness is based on one's realization that they are the eternal servant of Krishna. It means with a controlled mind, one obtains the full power to have happiness, become fully satisfied. No more lamenting, no more hankering. One becomes fully satisfied. And that is not dependent on any other circumstance. Imagine, I can be happy in all circumstances, regardless of what's being served for the Sunday feast prasadam. Meaning, the controlled mind, it gives such strength to find this full satisfaction. Because it becomes from the inside. It is internal, from our realization of who we are. In verse 9, it continues. Krishna continues. A person is considered still further advanced when he regards honest well-wishers, affectionate benefactors, the neutral, mediators, the envious, friends and enemies, the pious and sinners, all with an equal mind. This is the power of a controlled mind. We can encounter anyone, even our enemies, someone who is envious, pious or sinful, and one remains undisturbed. So we see very, very powerful consequence of a controlled mind. One becomes in control of their happiness. And we can understand and diagnose that when we are experienced, even in our spiritual life, you know, sometimes we are performing activities and spiritual activities in the temple, or you know, we're performing some actions, and we go through these ups and downs, happiness and distress. It is a sign that our mind is not yet fully controlled. It means the presence of these material desires are creating this fluctuation in consciousness, because a purely focused mind on the Supreme Lord is fully controlled and will manifest these symptoms. Complete neutrality amidst the pious, the sinful, the envious, honor, dishonor, heat, cold. Okay? So this is the symptom. So when we experience in our own endeavors that, oh, this person didn't acknowledge my service, or this thing didn't go right, or this problem I'm having, the cooperation here or there, instead of looking outward to understand what that circumstance is wrong, we can diagnose internally, saying it is due to a not fully yet controlled mind. And what is the solution? More chanting, more hearing, more association, to push out those material desires by the presence of our spiritual desires. And then we can achieve this. So how close we have come to purifying the mind, we can diagnose from these symptoms presented again in the sixth chapter, verses 7, 8, and 9. Very, very beautiful. And this, you know, brings me this controlled mind and how it can become the friend or the enemy. Reminds me of the story of Bilva Mangala Thakur. Bilva Mangala Thakur was a great, born in a great family of brahmanas. But Bilva Mangala Thakur was very sensuous, had very strong sense desires, and he was attracted to one prostitute by the name of Chintamani. And during the funeral sacrifice, the funeral ceremony of his own father, he was telling the priest, hurry up, make haste, so that he could satisfy his desires. He could not even withhold in the midst of performing a very important rite. And so Bilva Mangala Thakur, as we all know, went through great depths on this stormy night to be with his the object of his attraction, Chintamani. It was storming, heavy rains, and when he had to cross the river, there were no boatmen to take him across due to the very dangerous situation. But he didn't turn back. He remained, perseverant, driven by this lust desire. And he grabbed onto a log that was floating in the river and paddled himself across, only to realize it was not a log, but it was the corpse of a dead body. But still undeterred, thinking, wow, I should maybe turn around. He carried on. And Chintamani, seeing the very stormy situation, assumed Milvamangala Thakura would never come in such dangerous and life-threatening situation. She had closed up the house and locked the doors and went to take rest. But not understanding the power of an uncontrolled mind, Milvamangala Thakura reached the house and was banging on the door, but the banging on the door was, you know, drowned by the sounds of thunder and lightning. And so Chintamani did not hear. And so he decided to climb the gate, and he saw one rope hanging over the wall, and he grabbed onto this rope and pulled himself over this wall, only to realize that he had pulled onto a snake. Still determined, he fell into the courtyard, and there Chintamani heard the commotion and said, "What are you doing?" And he expressed his desire, and Chintamani, showing great mercy on Milvamangala Thakura, made a very powerful statement. She said, "If only your intense desire for me were replaced with the intense desire for Krishna, how great your life would be." So here she, you know, gives a very intelligent statement that the desires are not bad. It's what we desire that defines good or bad. The mind is very powerful. And she said, if your mind, you just dovetailed it into thoughts of Krishna, how much great life you could have. And that statement struck Milvamangala Thakura, and he immediately left, and he began to make his way towards Vrindavan. But we see, again, as this story continues, the danger, the susceptibility we have, even determined to enter the path of righteousness, the right path. He's walking to Vrindavan. But there on the walk, he ran into one attractive lady, and he began to follow that lady. And this lady entered her home, and Milvamangala Thakura followed. And her husband said, "Oh, you know, you have come," and received him very nicely and said, "What can I do in service to you?" And Milvamangala Thakura said, "I am very attracted to your wife. I would like to embrace her." And this gentleman said, "Okay." And he instructed his wife to prepare herself. And Milvamangala Thakura then asked this lady, "Can I borrow your hairpin?" She was a little bit surprised. "What do you want with my hairpin?" She said, "I have something business to do." And Milvamangala Thakura then took that hairpin and gouged out both of his eyes. He blinded himself, realizing how dangerous the uncontrolled eyes can be. He did not want to be tempted again for the rest of his life by his unreliable eyes. So we see how important the senses are. Don't recommend such extreme measures, of course, but we can understand how dangerous the uncontrolled eyes and ears and tongue can be. And so Milvamangala Thakura redetermined to come to spiritual life, made his way to Vrindavan, and ultimately became the great, great devotee, the Lila Shuka. He was personally given darshan by Lord Krishna himself, would come and bring him milk as the cowherd boy in Vrindavan. And he wrote a very important book, Krishna Karnamrita. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went on his travels to South India, he brought with him back two books. One was Brahma Samhita, the fifth chapter of Brahma Samhita, and the second was Milvamangala Thakura's Krishna Karnamrita. So he became a very, very great devotee. So this same mind that took him to very dangerous places also ultimately took him to the highest platform of bhakti. So the mind, when it's used correctly, can be our greatest of friends. And so this pastime helps us see both sides of that. And the controlled mind, we see how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was instructing us to be very, very careful when we ask this question, what's the harm? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so strict because he wanted to protect us from letting the small things lead to very big desires. And in the pastime of Chota Haridas, you know, Chota Haridas went to beg some rice. And for that activity of begging rice from a lady, from Madhavi Devi, the sister of Sikhi Maiti, not only a lady, she was in her 70s, an older lady. But Chota Haridas had gone to beg rice. And for that offense, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said he'll never see him again. And it's a very, why? Such an extreme. He went to beg rice from an old lady. What's the harm? But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was trying to show us the importance of how small deviations can lead to very large deviations later. And so he performed this very instructive pastime. And in the commentary here, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives 7 great lessons from the story. And the 5th was how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's severe correction for this minor deviation is the sign of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's great mercy. Because that minor deviation can grow into a very destructive situation where our whole consciousness is consumed. And so it's actually the great mercy when one can correct us from even the smallest of deviations. But it takes a humble heart to receive such correction. Otherwise, we become very, very upset. So we see in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was very strict, not for strict out of being difficult, but for the benefit and showing this great mercy to protect us, because these small material desires can ultimately consume our entire consciousness and lead to great suffering and difficulty. So this is some thoughts on verse number 30 of discussing the mind and the loss of one's consciousness due to sense desires. So, and here, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Ananda Koti Vaishnavinda ki jai. Any corrections, comments, clarifications to today's discussion?
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, please accept my humble obeisances. Thank you very much, very much for this very, very wonderful class. I really loved all the examples that you gave and the analogies, and makes us think a lot. Thank you very much for inspiring us so much today morning. Yeah, the class was very beautiful, Prabhu. Thank you. Very, very nice class. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for your blessings.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Dhanvat Pranam. Thank you so much for the beautiful class, Prabhuji. I like all your examples and very nice instructive points, Prabhuji. How many times we hear about this controlling of mind, it's very difficult to follow. Always we forget, keep on forgetting all these things. But it's like a reminder today. Thank you so much for the class, Prabhuji. I request all the devotees, if they have any comments or questions for Prabhuji, they can go ahead. Thank you, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna, Dhanavad Pranam.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, Dhanavad Pranam, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Yeah, nice, very nice class and the points, Prabhuji. I have one question. Prabhuji, I heard many times that, focusing our mind on the lotus feet of the Lord does give us that strength to control the mind. So how does that happen, Prabhu? What is the process that happens when we focus our attention and mind on the lotus feet of the Lord? What is the reason, Prabhu?
So ultimately we're drawn to things that give us happiness, right? The soul is ananda. So Krishna says that when one experiences a higher taste, they naturally let go of the lesser taste. Just like, an example, if you have a $5 bill in your hand and I come to you and say, give me that $5 bill, you'll say, no, I want it. It's mine. But if I say, no, take this $20 bill and give me your $5 bill. Without a moment's hesitation, you'll exchange. Because you're exchanging something of lesser value for something of higher value. And if I give you another 20 in exchange for a 5, you'll exchange all your monies because you're exchanging something higher for lesser. So when we meditate on the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord and his transcendental pastimes and the glories of him and his devotees and the Srimad Bhagavatam and all the different shastra, these are the higher taste. They're so sweet. And so when we experience something sweet, it is very easy to let go of something lesser. And so that's how it works. We exchange lesser items for something of a higher. We're not going to give up our material desires until we can replace it with something better. Nobody will exchange that $5 bill for a $1 bill. So our material desires will never leave us until we can replace it with something better. So we have to find what is better than our material desires. It is Krishna, our eternal Father, our eternal relationship. And so the attraction that one experiences in spiritual life leads one to perform more devotional service. And the more one has devotional service, the more attraction one has. But now the rub comes. Wait a minute. I enjoy watching movies more than I do chanting my holy names. Factually, the holy names are more attractive, but I'm not tasting that. So Rupa Goswami explains that in the Nectar of Instruction, that due to our jaundiced condition, the taste for those things that are bitter actually tastes sweet. And the taste for those that are actually sweet tastes bitter because we are in our jaundiced condition due to avidya, ignorance. So what to do? Well, a jaundiced person eats the sugar cubes, though it tastes bitter, so that it can ultimately revive its real taste. So similarly, though, you know, maybe hearing and chanting and the association, maybe that still feels a little bit less sweet. That is due to our position of avidya. But by remaining fixed in that process, ultimately the real taste of the holy names will come out, and then the taste of the material elements will subside. So it is fact, higher taste is present in spiritual life, but we may not be perceiving that today due to our, you know, ignorance, our avidya, but by the process of continuously chanting and associating, ultimately the real taste will come, and we'll be exchanging, you know, all these lesser tastes for much higher tastes. And that's how it happens.
Yeah, thank you very much, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhuji, for your question.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, Dharma Pranam, all glories to Srila Prabhupada and Guru Maharaj. Beautiful, beautiful class. Amazing one. And how we should control our mind. A mind can be a friend and an enemy. And all your pastimes that you mentioned, Bilwa Mangal Thakur and Chota Haridas. Also I like the example of Burujan Prabhu's lecture that you mentioned, the cup with salt, water, and honey. One quick question was that mind, I mean, so hard to kind of control, as you rightly said. Now, should we treat that mind as a separate entity to kind of, when it tells things, when we are kind of getting into that circle of trying to follow our mind, so should we consider that, you know, that is something separate from us? Is that a better way to deal with it, kind of thing?
Yeah, I wouldn't say, don't consider it separate from us. It's part of our overall existence, the mind. But again, when the mind expresses its, you know, unclean or dirty or you know, what we call, you know, unproductive desires or thoughts, just let it go. Don't contemplate them, right? It's too hard to stop those from coming because it's based on our past association with the material world. So when that, you know, thought comes, just let it go. Talk ourselves into it. No, this is nonsense. This is not right. What is right is what I know. So, you know, the thoughts are going to come because of our, you know, past contamination, but we are in a process of, you know, very rapidly removing them. But in the interim, when those thoughts come, let them go and let the mind instead dwell on the sweetness of Krishna. and the sweetness. Because if we separate ourselves from our mind, then how are we going to remember the Lord? Right? The mind is a very useful tool. It's a very powerful instrument to bring us to meditate on Krishna. So we need it. We don't want to separate from the mind. We just want to use it productively. You know, just like a knife. A knife, you can say, is a dangerous instrument. It can kill somebody. But a knife is also useful to chop vegetables to make offerings to Krishna. So we don't abandon the knife. We just use it very nicely. Okay? So similarly, we use the mind very productively. And we embrace the mind. It's a great vehicle to store all the thoughts of Krishna and his pastimes. So that's it. Just let the bad thoughts go. Don't dwell on them. And try to harness the power of the mind by filling it with spiritual life.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Yeah, Prabhu, so you very nicely described the problem and very nicely described the solution also and how to stay in that solution. So Prabhu, as we struggle and this forgetfulness keeps coming back and we forget and like switch back to our old habits.
Yeah.
Is it like helpful? Like we see so many books, like how to change habits. Like spend time on that and see if I can change any of our bad habits.
The most helpful thing is, you know, the material means to change habits. You know, are very temporary and ultimately ineffective. The best way to change our habits is through the process of cleansing the consciousness, and that is by our bhakti. So chant more, read more, associate more. You know, we read these verses from Bhagavad Gita. We read these verses from Srimad Bhagavatam. Ultimately, the same topics are being repeated over and over and over again. Why? To help constantly serve as a reminder to us of how we can proceed in Krishna consciousness. So the best way to break the habits is to build the good habits of spiritual life. And so, you know, when we are finding difficulty, you know, double up, do more, right? Engage more in service and more in chanting, more in reading. And that is the way to break the bad habits. The artificial means of breaking bad habits through, you know, these different ways is ultimately insufficient to overcome the desires of sense objects. You know, the lust is so powerful. No matter how much we try to restrain them, they won't work until we replace them with better desires. So it's why association is so important, right? In association, we develop strength to overcome, to break these bad habits, to, you know, to not fall into temptation. When we ask, what's the harm? Somebody will tell us, this is the harm, like that. You know, so the association and devotional service, that's the best means. Just keep doing, and know the very powerful effects of bhakti will very rapidly overcome the mind when I'm determined to do so. We have to have enthusiasm. We have to be determined. That is all we need. Determination in our bead bag is sufficient to do everything. Nothing else is needed, actually.
Okay. Thank you, Prabhu.
Of course, determination, you know, makes one the recipient of Krishna's mercy. Everything is dependent on the mercy of the Lord. But what we can do is determination. So thank you, Prabhuji. Any other comments or questions before we adjourn?
Prabhuji, one question, Prabhuji. Why Sanat Kumara is answering Prabhuji like other Kumaras would have answered also, right?
Yeah, he is the senior of the Kumara, so he is speaking. That is generally the etiquette. So, yeah, that's why he is speaking.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Prabhuji. Yeah, Hare Krishna.
Hare.
Prabhuji, I wanted to just share one small thing with you. President, about the control of the mind, if that's okay, if you have 2 minutes. Yeah, I mean, this was just a few days back, and it was Ekadashi. So, and I have been told, by some of the devotees that, you know, on Ekadashi day, you should not take rest, or you should not, take a nap for a half an hour sleep or something. Otherwise, your fast of Ekadashi goes. So, yeah, that other day, I was getting very, very sleepy in the afternoon, and it was happening all the time. After every few minutes, I will think about it again. I know that my mind is telling me to go to sleep. Just sleep for some time. You know, it's okay. It's fine. It's not going to be, you know, it's not going to affect your fast or whatever. You know, the body really needs it. You are so tired. Every time, you know, after a few minutes, the thought will keep on coming. And I'm consciously trying to do something about it, at least maybe read or, you know, listen to something. So I at that point of time, I realized it's really the mind which is telling me so many times. And it keeps on harping again and again, almost felt like giving up on that. And then for some reason, I don't know, the intelligence took better of me, which is unusual for me, but it did. And I was able to overcome it. So I'm thinking that it's just that, you know, when we become conscious that, you know, it is this mind which is telling us, and we just kind of be steadfast on it, probably it might work. I don't know.
Yes. Intelligence is the control of the mind, as you said. You had good intelligence to tell the mind, you be quiet. Don't pay attention. So very nice. Thank you for sharing. Okay.
Anybody have any questions or comments for Prabhuji? Okay, if there are no more questions or comments, I think we can end the call here. Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for the wonderful class once again. Nandvat Pranam, all goes to Srila Prabhupada and Guru Maharaj. Thank you for your association and time and enlightening us with nice points, Prabhuji. Vancha Kalpa Darubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Pevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Grandhara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai His Grace Nitya Krishna Das Prabhuji Ki Jai. Thank you so much, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much.